welcome to Comic Talk Today for Monday, May 14th, 2018. It is a new week. I hope it's going well for you, and I hope that you all had a great weekend. This is, of course, an episode of Top of the Pile in which I will talk about a good chunk of the books that I read from this past comic book day, which would have been May 9th, 2018. But first, I want to kick off with a question. I requested some questions on Twitter. Some of you replied. I'm going to pick one for today, and in fact, tomorrow's episode will be based on two different questions, one from Chris and one from Glenn. But in order to stay with topic on this one, I chose Travis's question, and he wanted to know what my thoughts were on the New Age of Heroes, the DC initiative of brand new heroes kicking off and stemming out of DC Metal. And what are my thoughts? They're pretty good. All right, there's your answer, Travis. Have a good one. No, I'm just kidding. They're actually really interesting. I've talked about a couple on this very podcast. I talked about Immortal Men number one a few weeks ago. I believe I talked about Terrifics number one and two. I haven't really talked about the rest, but they're all pretty interesting. There's Damage, which is Robert Venditti and Tony Daniel. Then we've got Silencer, which I think so far, well, I don't know yet. I have to think about that. It might be my favorite, which is weird. It's Dan Abnett writing, which I love Dan Abnett. And then John Romita Jr. on art. And that one's been really interesting. We've got Sideways, which is Justin Jordan, Dan DiDio, and the art is Kenneth Rocafort. That one's pretty interesting as well. The Terrifics is Jeff Lemire and Ivan Reis. That I'm pretty, you know what? I think that might be my favorite right now. That could be subject to change soon. I'll talk about that in a minute. Curse of Brimstone just came out, I think, like 2 weeks ago. It's Justin Jordan and Philip Tan. That one I'm undecided on yet, but we'll see. It was a good first issue, but we'll see how it goes. We got Immortal Men. That is James Tynion IV writing with art by Jim Lee. And I know I talked about the first issue, which was interesting, but it didn't quite grab my attention. Issue 2 just came out, and I think based on what I saw in issue 2, I might be sticking with it. It was a nice change of pace from the first issue. So if you ended up not purchasing the book for whatever reason, maybe because I said not to buy it, I mean, I didn't say that, but maybe I did, then you might want to take a second look, because I think that one could end up being really interesting. New Challengers comes out next week, well, actually this week, on the 16th. And that is written by Scott Snyder and Aaron Gillespie with art by Andy Kubert and Klaus Janson. So that one could be really interesting. It's based on the all Kirby characters, if I'm not mistaken. So that could be good. The one that I'm most looking forward to will be out on June 6th. And that is The Unexpected. It's written by Steve Orlando with Ryan Sook and Kerry Nord on art. So if you're, I know a lot of the Valiant folks are big Kerry Nord fans. That might be one to check out. It looks really interesting and much more fantasy than some of the other ones. I don't know, Immortal Men's kind of fantasy. So, I mean, overall, I'm pretty happy with the books. I still feel like it's a weird initiative for DC to kick off this separate universe of heroes for their line, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes. It's still fairly on for most of these books. I think the first two to come out were Silencer and Damage. And so those are a little bit further in. And they're good. But it's, I don't know, if there were like classic DC characters, I might not be too thrilled with it. But because they're new, they're still kind of interesting and exciting. Although I know overall, none of these books are selling very well for DC. So, you know, it may end up being that none of these books last past, I don't know, 10, 12 issues, which I guess in the market now is probably okay, but that's not the intent. The intent is for all of these to be ongoing, so we'll see how it goes. I do hope that these new characters catch on with people, even if it's not a massive audience, at least better than what it is currently. So we'll see how that goes. But thanks, Travis, for the question. I do hope you check out some of these Silencer or some of these New Age of Hero books. And we can chat on Twitter a little bit, and I'll make some recommendations. But again, I think Terrifics is the best one so far. It is super fun and crazy. And it reminds me so much of Fantastic Four. It's really great. And of course, it's Jeff Lemire writing, so if you're a Jeff Lemire fan, it's probably a no-brainer. And now, without further ado, it's time for Top of the Pile! It's one of my favorite episodes to do. I've got a bunch of books to read. How many did I read? I don't know. I read like 15 or 20 books. I'm obviously not going to talk about 15 or 20 books. I'm going to talk about, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8. I've got 9 books that I want to talk about, some of them very briefly, so hopefully this will be a slightly shorter episode. And I want to kick off with the one that surprised me the most, I think. Yeah, we'll go with that. And that is World of Tanks Citadel. This is from Dark Horse Comics. It is written by Garth Ennis, with art by PJ Holden, colors by Michael Atiyah, and letters by Rob Steen. And boy, was I surprised by this. It is great. This is, of course, the Garth Ennis book that's based on the World of Tanks video game, except Garth Ennis is a ginormous wartime story nerd, and he does an amazing job doing wartime stories, and I was pretty happy with this one. It is not the type of story that I generally like to read. A, it's a war story, and I'm not a huge fan of those, but B, I generally like to go for character more than story, and the thing with this book is that this is based on real-life events, so what's going to be happening in this book is based on the Battle of Kursk. I think that's right. Yeah, Battle of Kursk, which was a battle on the Eastern Front between the Germans and the Russians. And so, of course, this is kind of a fictionalized retelling of that event. And if you're a history buff, then you might know how this story will end up turning out. But I like seeing it in the book. And it's really fun to see all these tanks freaking destroying each other and the airstrikes. I don't know. It was pretty fun. There's some really interesting characters here that I wasn't expecting. I do appreciate the level of humanity that Garth Ennis brings to something like war. Because I think we often forget. Even though, you know, you might know service people, right? Like people that serve in the armed forces. Of course, they are people to you, but, you know, oftentimes when you hear some of these stories, in particular older stories, right, like, I don't know, wars during the 1800s or World War I, World War II, you often don't get the human perspective, and I can appreciate that Garth Ennis is doing a very nice job at bringing in a human element to the craziness that is war. So I was actually a pretty big fan of this. I'm going to be sticking with it. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 4 out of 5, and that's World of Tanks from Dark Horse Comics. Well worth a read. Well worth a read. Next up from Top Cow, I read Medieval Spawn and Witchblade number 1, which is written by Brian Haberlin and Brian Holguin, with art by Brian Haberlin, colors by Gerard Van Dyke, and letters by Francis Takenaga. And I love Spawn. Here's the thing I love. I love Spawn, and I love Witchblade. And when you put the two things together, you would automatically assume that I would love this book, except you're not correct. I enjoyed the book, but it wasn't my favorite thing to read. And I wanted to bring it up because I didn't catch this was coming out until actual comic book day. So, of course, I went and picked it up. And I thought overall the story was interesting, but the problem with this first issue is there is way too much setup in the story. And I mean, you get plenty, right? You learn who this medieval spawn is, that he's the king of this land. You get who the good guys and the bad guys are, but there's a lot of stuff being introduced. And then towards the end of the issue, there's another sect of characters that are introduced that hadn't appeared before. And you're like, well, who are these people? What do they have to do with this whole thing? I'm assuming maybe that's where the Witchblade comes in. There is an artifact that pops up that could be kind of the Witchblade in its, I guess, jewelry form. You know, like the bracelet form. Very possible. But we don't see the Witchblade itself. We do get quite a bit from Spawn. And, you know, it's a typical Spawn character. Doesn't know anything about his past. He's got all this power. And he's trying to learn who he is. So we'll see how this one ends up going. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't totally blown away by it. I will be picking up issue 2, so I'm going to go ahead and give this one a 3 out of 5. And again, that's Medieval Spawn and Witchblade number 1 from Image Comics. Since we're on the Image front, I'll talk about a couple other books. I read Analog 2, since I really enjoyed the first issue. And that was a pretty interesting one. There's definitely a lot of world building in this second issue. We get to meet this corporate entity who is looking to enlist our main character's help in reading other people's secrets. And of course, if you remember Analog, this is a near future story in which people can no longer communicate safely online because there's no encryption or anything like that. So there are couriers that transport secrets in paper between different places. And this company, who is a subsidiary of the U.S. government, they have acquired a metric crap ton of photocopiers, which I thought was hilarious. And so what they want to do is kind of get all these couriers in their pocket so they can open up the briefcases, make copies of whatever files are in there, and then send the courier back to deliver the message without the recipient knowing. And that's really interesting that the level of work that it would take for something so analog to be as easily copyable and readable as a digital file is incredible. But I do enjoy the twist that the story's taken, so I'm going to continue reading that one. I'm really enjoying Analog, and I hope you're picking that one up too. That was a 4 out of 5. I also, to follow up, read Isola number 2, and I was not sold on the first issue whatsoever. But I gotta say, the second issue was much more interesting. The art is absolutely gorgeous. It is like watching the most high quality anime in the world. It is just incredible to see. The art style is beautiful. The colors are vibrant and incredible. The story is not as good as the art. But I think with the second issue, it definitely kicked it up a few notches. The first issue was extremely confusing with almost zero story and almost zero exposition. It was literally a comic book of art, and I can appreciate that, but if I'm going to purchase a comic, I do want a story. And I think with the second issue, we are learning a little bit more about what the story is, and as a result, I've decided I will continue reading this book at least for one more issue, and then maybe I'll make my decision on whether I'm going to drop this one or not. Even though I did enjoy this quite a bit more, I'm going to go on the lower end, and I will give this one a 3 out of 5. The final Image book, I think, may be definite top of the pile for this week. I'm not sure if it's number 1 or 2 or 3. I do have a few different books that are kind of vying for the top spot. But I do want to shout out Ronnie for reminding me that this was coming out, because I totally forgot it was. And that is Port of Earth number 5 from Image Comics. This is written by Zach Kaplan with art by Andrea Moody, colors by Vladimir Popov, and letters by Trey Pateri. And I really love this world. First of all, I love the art style here. It is, I don't know, at some point it's really gritty, and in some places it's very finished. It just depends on what the story is trying to convey. Generally, when we have the aliens popping in is when things get a little grittier. And of course, when we have scenes inside the port, things are grittier as well. And for people that don't know, Port of Earth is, just as you would imagine from the title, literally the port where aliens would dock on Earth in order to conduct business. And there's multiple reasons that this port was set up. And in this issue, we learn quite a bit about that. We learn when it was done, why it was done. We learn about the Earth Protection Agency that is in charge of guarding the port. And of course, of taking care of any alien problems that might occur around Earth. Because even though the aliens aren't supposed to leave the port, sometimes they do. And bad stuff happens, as we see, like people get killed. So this is really interesting. And it follows a couple of agents of this ESA, the agency that safeguards Earth. I really dug the way that we get from one piece of story to the next. I love the way the book starts also. It starts with the head of the ESA being interviewed on national TV. And the journalist interviewing him has a lot of questions that are a little bit leading, because it's obvious to her, and as we go through the story, maybe obvious to the reader, that there's a lot more going on here than the ESA is willing to discuss. And we do see some maybe homegrown conspiracy stuff here between the U.S. government and the aliens, maybe conspiracies between the aliens themselves. We do see one of the alien sniper assassins from a previous issue pops back in here and tries to assassinate the delegates from one of the Earth confederacies or the alien confederacies. So that was really interesting. I think this is a really interesting book in that it's slower paced than most action-packed stories would be. But I think the action itself is interspersed enough where it keeps you wanting to see what happens next. And all the characters are very interesting and very well developed. Even when new ones pop up, you're immediately interested to know who they are and what role they play within the story. So, Part of Earth number 5, really, really fantastic read. I highly recommend you pick up the first 4 if you haven't. They are available in trade. And because it's an Image trade, I'm going to assume that it's $9.99. But really well worth it. Highly, highly recommended. I know Zach Kaplan's got a book coming out for Aftershock as well, and I will be picking that up. I think that comes out next month, actually. So, Port of Earth, number 5. I'm going to go ahead and give this one a 4 out of 5. Really, really good. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Let's move out of the indie front for a second, and then we'll come back to the indies. Because I want to talk about a couple of DC books. And I know you're saying, Martin, you usually do so well in trying to not talk about DC books. And yes, you're right. I do. I try. I try very hard. I love my indie comics. But you know, I also love DC comics. I love all publishers. But there were a couple books that I wanted to talk about. One is DC proper. Well, actually, you know what? They're both DC proper. But one is set within the superhero universe. The other one is not. And the one that is, of course, is going to be Justice League, No Justice. This is written by a whole plethora of people. We've got Scott Snyder, Williamson's writing, James Tynion IV, and the art is Francis Manapul, the entire thing, and it's gorgeous. I love Francis Manapul art. And it's weird, too, because in some spots, I was like, is this Manapul? But he's the only artist listed, so it must be. There's some pages that look very rendered, some that look sketchier. I love the variety of art in this book. I wanted to talk about this because when I read DC Nation number 0, which I talked about last week, I was really, really down about Justice League No Justice and whatever these rebooted teams will be after this miniseries ends. No Justice is a 4-issue miniseries running through this month, and then next month we'll start seeing the relaunch titles. Including the, 3 or 4 Justice League books, the new Teen Titans book, etc. The story in DC Nation, of course, wasn't the best for me. I think it was just too much going on at once and not enough backstory. Had that been done within this issue, and some of it felt like it was from this issue, I think it would have felt much better because there was some backstory to tell. And in this, there is a lot of backstory, and there's a lot of fledging out what is happening, what the threat is, why we have all these new Justice League teams, why they're being sorted out the way they're being sorted out. And I thought that was the most interesting piece of the story. Brainiac is the one that bands all the teams together. And the reason is, he is the smartest man in the universe. Or smartest robot, I guess. And he convinces the League to do this because he, as he's fighting Superman, he shows Superman the threat of these 4 ancient gods that are going to come back now that the source wall has been broken, or at least, there's a tear in the source wall. These 4 entities are coming back to our universe, which they originally created, and they want to regain whatever power they used to create those worlds. And that whole thing was really interesting. I dug that Brainiac's got a mathematical formula for defeating all these teams and why he, when they announced all these teams, some people were like, well, those are all really weird lineups. And I like how it's explained that you can't have a typical lineup for these beings because they'll know immediately how to fight that team because they'll be predictable. But by having the teams not be what you normally expect, it's going to be a lot more chaotic. And therefore, the team will work better, at least against these entities. So I did enjoy that. I still have a minor quibble with villains joining superhero teams. I think we just see so much of it that I'm getting kind of bored, but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt for this. I did enjoy the story quite a bit. The main issue I have, though, is that when I read this, it was so much like The New Avengers number one by Jason Aaron, where, you know, the team's getting banded together and they have to fight these super being gods, right? In The Avengers, we have the Celestials. In No Justice, we have these... They're not new... I almost said new gods. They are new and they are gods, but they're not the new gods. But the character design on these characters is very similar to the Celestials as well. So that was interesting to see. I understand that oftentimes Marvel and DC try to outdo each other by slightly copying each other's characters and stories, but this one seemed a little too close, especially when the books are released a week apart. Overall, though, I did enjoy it. I don't know if maybe my expectations were so low that I liked it more than I should have, but I did. I enjoyed it. So I will be reading the 4-issue mini. I'm hoping that it has a better ending than DC Metal did, and therefore has me excited to read the new Justice League books when those come out. So for now, I'll continue it. My score on this one's going to be a 3 out of 5. The other DC book is not a superhero book. It is part of the Hanna-Barbera line, and that is Scooby Apocalypse number 25. And I gotta say, I wish I'd been reading this the whole time. I read it when it first started, and then I just kind of dropped off of it. I was reading that, and Flintstones, and the Jetsons, I pretty much dropped them all. But this one was good. I figured issue 25, I'll pick it up, let's see what happens. And, of course, it's freaking zombies, and I love me some zombies. But I was really amazed by the level of emotion that this book had. It is written by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, which, come on, classic writers. Fantastic writers. Pencils by Ron Wagner, with inks by Andy Owens and colors by Hi-Fi. The majority of this takes place the whole thing takes place in a mall, because malls are great settings for zombie attacks. And they're not like quite zombies, they're more like monsters, but still. We'll go with zombies because that sounds better. We have the aftermath of this battle that Daphne and Fred had with these monsters. And the rest of the Scooby gang is hiding somewhere else in the mall. And as the story develops, we see the story kind of separating into two timelines. You've got current stuff, you got past stuff interweaving with each other. Previous to this, Fred and Daphne had gotten engaged. Finally, after, 50 years, they got engaged. And they were extremely happy, and then this attack happens. And things start going downhill, and then she realizes that maybe she doesn't want to be married. The book goes through the reasons why that might be, and Fred tries to convince her that they should still be married, and why he loves her. And, you know, she doesn't want to hear it. There's a whole back and forth between the two as they're fighting these monsters. They find a way to defeat the army of monsters, and I'm not going to give that away. But ultimately, there is a sacrifice that needs to be made. And in this issue, spoiler alert, okay, I'm going to continue, Fred dies. That was really shocking to me. I kind of knew it was coming. I was watching something, I can't remember what it was. Somebody was interviewing Dan DiDio, and he brought it up. So this had been discussed previously. It was still shocking to read, in particular because I became so engrossed in this story. Again, I love good character development and great character interactions. And I think the interactions between Daphne and Fred in this issue were particularly touching, because just when they had their happiest moment, everything kind of gets turned upside down and they get down to their lowest point in their lives. And that was really impactful to me. I highly recommend Scooby Apocalypse number 25. If you're not checking this book out, go back and pick up some issues. I know I'll be going back, and I'm going to try to reread this from issue 1. Not immediately. I've got a few things on my list in terms of trades that I want to get through first. But this is well worth it. Thoroughly enjoyed it. This is definitely a 4 out of 5 for me. Let's go on to a Black Mask title. I love to talk about Black Mask. And that book is Cal Exit number 3, No, your ears do not deceive you. This book came out, and it came out on time. In fact, there was a joke about it in issue 2. At the end of the issue, it says, Calyx at number 3 next month. And then in parentheses, it said, no, seriously. So I'm glad it came out on time. I've been really digging Calyx. I know this is not for a lot of people, but this pretty much has a story of... They haven't quite seceded, but it's kind of like California secedes from the Union. And it's based on some of the events, current events in politics, where Trump had this whole thing where he wanted to deport immigrants. And then there were a few cities around the country that said they were going to be sanctuary cities and not allow these people to be deported. And so in this book, that happens in a city in California, which in L.A., actually, the whole Sacramento, which is the capital of California, decides that the whole state is going to be a sanctuary state. Of course, the people that own, like, farmland and things like that, they're not Democrats. They're on the Republican side, so they're kind of pro the president. It's not Trump here, of course, but it's based on that event. And they decide to not allow the big cities to get, you know, fresh water and food and stuff like that. So there's a whole coalition of states and cities in the West Coast that forms to help these sanctuary cities. And so there's a few different factions. And I like how well fleshed out they are. There's their faction in L.A. Where the resistance is. There's a counter-resistance that's helping the National Guard, who have, I guess we can say, invaded this part of California. And it's really interesting, the back and forth. And all the characters here are very personable. In fact, there's a girl who is a member of the Resistance, and they keep calling her Wonder Woman because she cosplays as Wonder Woman, and the whole issue, she's dressed as Wonder Woman, and she is a total badass. Like, she plays meek because she is pretending to be this drug dealer's girlfriend in order to get back to the part of L.A. where she needs to be. And she ends up killing a couple guys from the National Guard. But the story leading up to that happening is just freaking hilarious. It's about a guy's... The drug dealer's got this guard's boots. And so they pull him over because he's got the boots on, and the guy was just recently killed. And the whole interaction between the two and the way that he ends up getting out of it is really funny. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. The characters are, of course, very broken and very, I don't know, they're very human. And I like that. And I know this book won't be for a lot of people because of the politics involved. But if you can get past that and just read this as some kind of maybe like alt history book where this could possibly happen, then I think it'd be really interesting. Pizzolo, who writes the book, is very much left-leaning, and he has no qualms about talking about that. He's kind of punk rock, you know? At the end of the book, there's always back matter, and there's some really interesting ones in this particular issue. He always interviews, like, politicians and things like that as well, so... Really interesting back matter. I don't think that'll appeal to as many as the story will, if you're willing to have kind of an open mind and take this maybe not as based on a political event. I think you'll really enjoy it. So Calyx at number 3 is going to be a 4 out of 5. And this collected, it's going to be collected in a trade with issues 1, 2, and 3, which I find a little odd. I'm hoping that doesn't mean that this book, we're not going to see issue 4 until next year again. It kind of gave me the feeling that that's what's going to happen if he wants to collect the trade already. Black Mass does tend to do a lot of shorter trades, which I don't like. I do like their trades, though, because they're oversized hardcovers, and the covers are beautiful. So I hope not. I really want more than 3 issues in a trade. But, you know, if you don't want to pick this up, maybe you want to go and find the trade, because this book will read better now that you don't have to wait 12 months. To read 3 issues. While still on the indie front, we will talk about Punk's Not Dead number 4. This is from Black Crown, and it is written by David Barnett with art by Martin Simmons.
letters by Aditya Bidikar.
Now I'm going to talk about this book a little differently than the rest, for a particular reason. I'm a little lost about what's going on with Punk's Not Dead. And part of the reason I picked up this book is because Jay from the Best of the Rest podcast recommended it. And I was very curious. And in fact, I spoke with him tonight a little bit to see if I could get some guidance on what I could be missing. And as it turns out, he might be a little confused as well. Now, that's not to say that the story itself is confusing. What's confusing is I'm not quite sure where the story is going. So this does take place, I believe, in the present. Fergie, who's the main character that we follow, is not possessed, but kind of attached to the ghost of Sid, which, as I said last week when I was talking about it on Comic Predictor, is pretty much Sid Vicious. He's a punk rocker who's dead, except they never say he's Sid Vicious. At one point, they say it's not Sid Vicious, but listen, it's Sid Vicious. And he's attached to this ghost for some reason. There is an agency that is tracking all these ghosts, and they track paranormal activity around the world. So we do see a lot of that agency in this particular issue, because they're looking for Fergie and they're looking for Sid, and, well, they're looking for a couple other people as well. I'm just not seeing why we're on this journey. And, if this was a first issue, maybe even a second issue, I wouldn't expect to know where the writer is going to take me. But I would think that by the fourth issue, there has to be some long-term plan. Well, I don't know if long-term is the right word. But at least like a plan, right? I mean, four issues, I don't know how long this is going to be. We'll just assume six issues or eight issues. Like, if we're halfway through the story, it doesn't feel like it. It feels like we're still at the very beginning. There were some hints as to where we might be going for the next issue. They mentioned this demon entity god thing with a very ominous name. And so that's cool. But I want to know how that plays into the whole story itself. Even through my issues with the progression of the story, the book is extremely well written. And the art is fantastic. There's some really interesting panel layouts and page designs in this comic, which make it very artistic. And that's something that came up on my discussion of this book with Jay. And here, I'll just go ahead and read what he says. He says, "I think Black Crown may be trying a bit too hard to be avant-garde and sort of postmodern metafictional." Which is fine. I mean, I love postmodern metafictional. It was my favorite thing to read in college, and still one of my favorite things to read now when I'm not reading comics. In fact, the emphasis of my major was in postmodern literature. However, I don't know how well that works in a monthly comic. You know what I mean? If this were coming out as a original graphic novel, I could totally see that. But waiting a month in between each installment of this is kind of making it drag out, which is too bad because the book is really good. It is really good. So, I don't know. I'm going to continue with Punk's Not Dead. But, again, I want to know where we're going. So, if we can maybe figure that out by next issue, that'd be awesome. I'm just saying. Punk's Not Dead number 4, again, from Black Crown. I'm going to go ahead and even through all my issues. No, you know what? I'm gonna stick to my gut feeling. We're going to go 3 out of 5 on this one. And I guess that leaves us with just one book. And I'm still undecided if this is my favorite book of the week. We'll see what happens when I rate it. But of course, I'm talking about Venom number 1 from Marvel Comics. This is written by Donnie Cates with art by Ryan Stegman. Got J.P. Meyer on letters or on colors and Frank Martin on letters. This was really interesting. I was very much looking forward to this book in particular because it is Donny Cates writing, and I love pretty much everything that he's done so far. Let me just say, the Ryan Stegman art is freaking awesome. There are some panels in here where it looks like he is channeling Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man with the Venom designs. It is really well done. The story itself, I thought, was really well done. Now, I know that there's people that are having problems with the story because there is a lot of retconning going on in this first issue. As it turns out,
the Venom symbiote that we've known for, I don't know how long now, 30 years, 35 years, is not the only symbiote to come to Earth, or the first to come to Earth. Apparently, there's been symbiotes on Earth for a very long time. And so when the story picks up, we see this, looks like Vikings, and they're battling these symbiotes. So that's different, but I didn't mind it. I thought it went well with what Donny Cates was trying to tell here. And as it turns out, the other thing that's different is, now we've had the Venom, what was it called? Like Agent Venom or thing or something like that, where Venom was used as a secret agent by the U.S. government. Now, this references that, except it expands upon it, because as it turns out, Venom was not the only Agent Venom. There were groups of Agent Venoms, and we meet an ex-member of this program who is the only surviving member of his group of Agent Venoms. And so he is very well aware of what Eddie can do with the symbiote. And he enlists Eddie's help in order to track down where his other teammates are. Because as it turns out, they're being transported to a SHIELD facility to be destroyed. And of course, he doesn't want his friends killed. So they go on this journey and they meet more Agent Venoms. And I thought it was well done. Like, that's cool. You know, when you have, in particular that run, because I don't think that lasted but like a year or so. When you have a cool idea, it could always get cooler. Of course, it could get worse. But I think part of a writer's job is to constantly reimagine things in a way that's true to the legacy of a character, but that can make it different enough to fit a new type of story, a new narrative, a new way of making a character move forward. And the thing with Venom is one of those characters that was created in the 90s, and he is very 90s. And so, you know, different creators have tried to do different things. You had the Agent Venom stuff, you had the Venom Space Knight stuff, you had the Loop the Protector stuff, like, you know, all these different things that were tried. And ultimately, they all failed. That's why new things were tried. And I see nothing wrong with what Donnie's doing here, because he's expanding on stuff that has come before and just adding a few new wrinkles into it that I think make it really more interesting. And I thought the dynamic in this book between Eddie and the symbiote was fascinating. And I thought really well done, and done better than most people have done, at least, you know, over the past, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. So I enjoyed that, because in many ways this reads a lot like a horror comic, but disguised as a superhero book. And I think with the way this issue ends, and I'm not going to give that away, I think it might have been in the solicits if you read that, or if you read the synopsis for books before you read them. I'm pretty sure it's in there, but I'm not going to give the ending away. But the ending kind of was really interesting. It, in some ways, it reminds me of the very first great superhero film, Blade, which I still love. I rewatch that movie like every year. And in many respects, I think the way this issue ended was kind of a nod to that, which is nice, because I don't think Blade gets enough love in the Marvel Universe. And of course, we haven't seen a Blade movie in forever, but that's besides the point. I just like that Donnie's great at putting elements from other genres into whatever book he's doing. And I think it's really well done here to add those horror elements, the psychological thriller elements, into a superhero story, into really like a military espionage thriller. It's just really interesting and new and creative. And that's what I like to see. I like to see creative stuff. You know, I tweeted about this book and I was like, you know, I read 15 books and I think Venom's my favorite. And, you know, now that I've talked through the 9 or 10 books that I talked through tonight, I'm pretty sure that it's pretty up there, you know? I don't know if I can place it at number one yet. So for that reason, I'm going to stick with a 4 out of 5 so I can land it safely among good friends. But I thought it was really phenomenal. And I very much look forward to see where Donnie takes this book going forward. All I know is it'll probably be better than that movie that's coming out. And I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Comic Talk Today. You've been listening to Top of the Pile. Tomorrow, I will return with a new episode. It's a mix of things. It is, again, as I mentioned, based on a question that was asked by Chris on Twitter, a comment that Glenn made on Twitter as well, and partially a follow-up to last week's comment on this controversial book. Well, I mean, the book's not controversial, the creator is. You know what I mean. The episode from last Thursday. I hope you will enjoy that. I guarantee you it's not going to be what you think. But thanks for listening. I'll catch you then.